Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. January 19th marks the national celebration of a famous civil rights leader during the 1950s and 1960s. His life and work helped end racial separation in the United States. We will have more on that story later in the program. But first, some recently developed mechanical hands can be controlled by thoughts. But people who wear them must use their sight to know what they are touching. So scientists in the United States and South Korea have developed an artificial skin that lets people know more about objects they touch. A mechanical hand covered by the new skin could tell the user whether an object is wet or dry. It could also measure how firmly a person is holding the object. Kim Dae-hyung is a professor at Seoul National University School of Chemical and Biological Engineering. He leads a team of researchers that developed the skin. He says it acts and feels like human skin.
압력이라든지 온도라든지 피부의 당김이라든지 표면의 습도.
The skin can feel pressure, temperature, strain, and humidity. Also, it is soft, just like human skin, and embedded with heating elements that can make itself warm. Professor Kim says the skin cannot send signals to the brain, but he says scientists hope it will be able to someday.
그래서 저희가 만든 인공 피부가 그런 로봇 손과 합쳐져서 실제 장애
I hope a robotic limb with this synthetic skin can be used by disabled people. For industrial uses, it can be applied to various types of robots, like a humanoid robot. The scientists say mechanical hands covered with the skin may someday be able to type on a computer and even change a baby's wet diaper. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Many Americans will have an additional day off from work this weekend. The extra day is in celebration of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King was an important leader during the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King, Jr. was born in Atlanta, Georgia on January 15th, 1929. At that time, Atlanta was one of the wealthiest cities in the southern part of the United States. But Atlanta had laws designed to keep people of different races separate. The laws of racial separation existed all over the southern part of the United States. Martin was only 15 when he was ready to enter Morehouse College in Atlanta. At the university, Martin read the writings of the Indian leader Mahatma Gandhi. Martin also studied the books of the American philosopher Henry David Thoreau. Both men wrote about ways to fight injustice. Gandhi had led his people to freedom by peacefully refusing to obey unjust laws. Thoreau also urged people to disobey laws that were not just and to be willing to go to prison for their beliefs. Martin thought the ideas of Gandhi and Thoreau, nonviolence and civil disobedience, could be used together to win equal rights in America. Martin soon finished his studies in Boston and received a doctorate degree in religion. He was then offered a job at a church in Montgomery, Alabama. It was in Montgomery that Dr. King became the leader of a protest against the city bus system in 1955. The protest he led against the Montgomery bus system marked the beginning of the civil rights movement in the United States. The Montgomery bus boycott lasted 382 days. Finally, the United States Supreme Court ruled that racial separation was illegal in the Montgomery bus system. But that did not mean that racial separation in the United States had ended. Dr. King felt that the battle was almost won, and he wanted to call on the nation to show its support for civil rights. So Dr. King organized a march on Washington, D.C. The March on Washington took place in August 1963. About 250,000 people gathered there. They came to demand more jobs and freedom for all Americans. There were to be many other marches in Washington during the 1960s and early 1970s, but this was the biggest up to that time. It was in Washington that Martin Luther King gave one of the most famous speeches. The speech is known as the I Have a Dream speech. It expressed his ideas for the future.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Martin Luther King received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, but he did not live to see the final results of his life's work. He was shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee, in 1968. And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
from VOA Learning English. This is In the News. France is recovering from the terrorist attacks last week in Paris. 12 people were shot and killed at the offices of the magazine Charlie Hebdo. 5 others died in other attacks in and around the city. All 3 gunmen in the Paris attacks declared loyalty to Islamist groups. One such group, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, claimed responsibility for the Charlie Hebdo shootings. Most Muslims in France were quick to distance themselves from the violence. But some blame the government for not doing enough to help the country's disaffected minority youths. France is a largely Catholic country. But in the late 19th century, the French Revolution created a different set of values: liberty, equality, and brotherhood. At the Unity March in Paris last Sunday, those taking part repeated those values. France's relatively new Muslim community has become a major test of that ideal. The government has a lot of work to do to correct the problems of poor, disaffected young men like the Paris gunman. Susan Perry is with the American University in Paris. She spoke with VOA on Skype.
They lived on the margins of society, and there were no mechanisms in place to bring them in before it was too late. And so it's a government problem, but it's also a local community problem.
Parisians agree both the government and the Muslim community need to take action against Islamist militancy. On Thursday, French President François Hollande said the majority of Muslims are the main victims of religious extremists.
L'islamisme radical s'est nourri de toutes les contradictions.
In his words, radical Islam fed itself with all the contradictions, influences, poverty, inequalities, and conflicts unresolved for a long time. And it is the Muslims who are the first victims of fanaticism, fundamentalism, and intolerance. On a different continent, Boko Haram militants are fighting to establish their version of Islamic law in northeastern Nigeria. The group has claimed responsibility for numerous kidnappings and suicide bombings over the past 5 years. On Thursday, the group Amnesty International released satellite images of northeast Nigeria. The pictures show damage resulting from a Boko Haram attack on the fishing town of Baga last week. Local political leaders say hundreds of people were killed. The Nigerian military says about 150 people died in the attack. Daniel Iyer is with Amnesty International.
The satellite images that we have show that the attacks on Baga and surrounding towns were of an enormous scale. The town next to Baga, that is Doron Baga, the satellite images show that more than 3,100 buildings were destroyed in the attack. That means almost the entire town was razed to the ground.
The pictures suggest that vehicles and boats were removed from the area.
Many of the vehicles and boats that were there before the attack are now gone. So this is consistent with witness testimony that describes thousands of people fleeing to the safety of the capital of that state, Maiduguri, but also across Lake Chad to Chad.
Boko Haram has killed thousands of Nigerians. But Daniel Iyer says the recent attack is one of the worst Amnesty has documented. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Now the weekly special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Wide Net. It was written by Eudora Welty. Here is Larry West with the story.
William Wallace Jameson's wife, Hazel, was going to have a baby. But this was October, and the baby wouldn't be born until April. Hazel acted as if it would come tomorrow. She wouldn't speak to her husband when he came into the room. If he tried to touch her, she would run away from him or stick out her tongue at him. So one night, William Wallace went out with his friend Virgil Thomas. He didn't come home until the next morning. Hazel wasn't there when he got back. Instead, he found a letter from her. It said she was going to the river to drown herself. He ran out of the house. As he ran, he shouted for Virgil Thomas, who had just gone into his own house. "I've lost Hazel," William Wallace cried to his friend. "She went to drown herself in the river."
"Why, that's not like Hazel," said Virgil.
William Wallace reached out and shook Virgil. "We have to drag the river with the wide net." "Who will we get to help us pull the net through the river?" Virgil scratched his head.
"I'll get the Doyles and you go get the Malones," he said.
They met again 15 minutes later. "Here come all the Malones," said William Wallace. "I asked 4 of them to come help, but the rest of the family invited themselves."
"Don't they always do just that?" said Virgil.
From the other direction came the Doyles, with the eggs from their breakfast still on their faces. The whole crowd went to see Doc. Old Doc owned the wide net. He had a house on top of the hill, and he sat outside it on his rocking chair.
"Now what?"
he asked when everyone had arrived and stood in front of him. William Wallace stepped forward.
"If nobody else is using your wide net, could we use it?"
Virgil Thomas pushed William Wallace aside.
"We got reason to think William Wallace's wife is in the river, drowned."
Doc gave a long, low whistle.
"Hazel is the prettiest girl in Mississippi," he said. "A golden-haired girl. I never saw a prettier one. Never will."
He got to his feet and said,
"I'm coming with you."
They followed a path that took them through the deep woods and to the Pearl River. They walked in silence near William Wallace. They would not let him carry anything. Soon, the smell of the river spread over the woods.
"We're in the changing time," Doc said. "Any day now, the change will come. It's going to turn from hot to cold. And Old Man Winter will be standing in the door."
They walked on, and suddenly they reached the river. Everyone stopped. But Doc talked on as though nothing had happened.
"Only today," he said. "Today, in October sun, it's all gold. The sky, the trees, the water. Just before it changes, Everything seems to be made of gold.
William Wallace looked down. He thought of Hazel's shining eyes. He could see her in his thoughts, sitting at home like a piece of pure gold, too precious to touch. The men began to unfold the wide net. It was very old and had been used a lot. There, in the October light, it looked golden, too. Since the net was so wide, it was able to reach across the entire river. Splashing sounds filled the air. The Malones, with great groans, swam across the river. The Doyles stayed near Virgil Thomas. Each group grabbed an end of the net and began walking along the riverside. Doc got into a rowboat and followed the parade from the middle of the river. William Wallace swam in front of the wide net, diving down underwater. The dogs chased up and down, in and out of the water and in and out of the woods. Where the light fell on the river, it trembled gently. The willow trees leaned over the water. Their long branches hung like green waterfalls in the morning air. The men were catching lots of fish in the net, big ones and little ones. William Wallace caught more of the big fish than anyone else. He and the others put ropes through the fish's mouths and pulled them through the water behind them. They caught other things, too. Old shoes, a lady's necklace, and a baby alligator. "It's time we ate some of these fish," said Virgil. They all gathered by a clearing near the river and built a fire. Then, among clouds of smoke, they cooked and ate fish. They ate until they all were so full they couldn't eat any more. And then, one by one, they all fell asleep. The thunder woke them up. Lightning flashed and the sky looked black. All color left the world. The golden afternoon was just a memory. A wind touched each man on his forehead. They ran under some trees as hard drops of rain began to fall. The rain fell heavily. When the sudden storm ended, the men looked up the river ahead of them. "Look," said Virgil, "we've come almost to town." There, just beyond the trees, was Dover. It had rained there, too, and the town looked somehow like new. The wavy heat of the late afternoon came down as the men entered the main street. William Wallace walked through the town as if he did not see or hear anything. He carried his great catch of fish high, so that everybody could see it. Virgil came next, imitating William Wallace exactly. Then came the Doyles and the Malones, tossing their fish in the air. Behind the entire crowd walked Doc. The whole town of Dover came out to watch the men. People came out of their houses, the stores, and the post offices. "Did you ever see so many fish?" said the people of Dover. As the sun went down, Doc climbed the hill to his house. He sat down in his rocking chair and lit his pipe. William Wallace hung up the wide net, while Virgil Thomas waited for him. Then they both went to say good night to Doc.
"Well, now," said Doc when they came up, "I've never seen a better river dragging."
"But," Virgil objected, "we didn't catch Hazel."
Doc took the pipe out of his mouth. "She wasn't there," he said. "Girls don't like water, and they don't jump in rivers just because they're angry with their husbands. Remember that."
William Wallace looked up. "Didn't you think this morning she had drowned herself?"
"Not even once," Doc said.
Virgil and William Wallace walked home slowly. When they reached Virgil's house, Virgil said good night and went inside. William Wallace was alone. When he got to his own house, William Wallace saw something he had never seen before in his life. There, curved over his roof, was a rainbow at night. The moon was out, and its light fell on the little rainbow. It made William Wallace think of a lady's summer dress. The stars showed through the rainbow. William Wallace walked into his house. Someone called his name. The voice came from the bedroom. "What do you want?" he yelled. Then the bedroom door opened, and there was Hazel. She had not changed at all. "Supper is ready," she said. "I was wondering if you were coming home tonight. Go wash yourself for dinner." They sat on the front steps of their house after dinner. "Where were you this morning when I came in?" asked William Wallace. "I was hiding," she said. "I had just finished writing the letter." He looked at her. "Did you watch me while I was reading it?" "Yes," she laughed. "I was so close to you that you could have put out your hand and touched me." He bit his lip and pulled her into his arms. "Do you think you will do it again?" he whispered, holding her tightly. She tried to free herself for a few seconds, and then she suddenly relaxed in his arms. "I'll do it again if I feel like it," she said, smiling into his eyes. It was as if he had chased her and captured her again. After a few minutes, she took his hand and led him into the house.
You have just heard the story, The Wide Net, written by Eudora Welty. It was adapted for Special English by Donna DeSanctis, with permission from Russell and Volkening, Literary Agents, New York. This story is copyrighted. All rights reserved. Your storyteller was Larry West. For VOA Special English, this is Shirley Griffith.